The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Hey guys, sports betting season is in full force. NHL and NBA playoffs, we enjoyed those, and now football season is here. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. US, you can receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses also. BetUS is known as America's favorite sports book for a lot of reasons. No matter what the season, BetUS has all the games, NBA, NHL, team, player props, loads of NFL and college plays, whether futures or individual game odds. You can bet UFC matches and props, PGA golf, and round matchups and live betting on most sports, including golf. The online casino has hundreds of games, and the racebook has all your horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable, and the Sharp BetUS mobile platform is easy with full betting options. Follow my lead and partner with a sports betting company with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I think Nick Saban just made a kid at least $800,000. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. Chuck, what are you talking about? I'm talking about watching Saturday's Alabama destruction of the Miami Hurricanes. That if you didn't watch, that's okay. This was as much of a whitewash as Nick Saban chose for it to be. In fact, Nick Saban used this game to send a message, in my estimation. Nick Saban used this game in part as a teaching moment for Jaleel Billingsley. I said second half of last season and then through spring and leading into August, and then, oh my gosh, he's not at practice, and then Nick Saban spoke about him. And he was using Jaleel Billingsley, and apparently word is, I don't even know if it's true, that he had made a choice and gone to a party when he wasn't supposed to. Something could have been a big deal. Turned out it wasn't, but it could have been, and selfish and can't do what you want. And that was the speech he gave. Jaleel Billingsley is an unbelievable. I might have called him number, was he 13 last year or 19? Might have called him the wrong number. But he's just an intriguing looking player out there. 6'4 by 230 can fly. Well, he got himself in Dutch with his head coach. And this game was such a whitewash, and Saban knew it from the outset, that part of what happened on Saturday, in addition to facing the 14th highest-ranked team in America, in addition to just picking them apart, Nick Saban used the game from the outset almost to send a message. Now, his comments about Jaleel Billingsley, that was used to send a message to everyone else on the team that we all know how good Jaleel can be, but even he isn't above reproach. that from the outset, it was pretty clear. Cameron Latu, who is an edge player, either outside linebacker, defensive end, something, and had zero career catches and was moved to tight end because he looked so intriguing and athletic, and maybe he can make the switch, but he's going to be an inline guy. He's not the receiver. Billingsley is the receiver. What'd Cameron Latu do on Saturday? In addition to picking the bones clean of the number 14 team in America, who may be the second best team in a Power 5 conference. In addition to that, from the outset, it was clear Nick Saban knew, and I can also send a message to Jahlil and everybody else. Cameron Latu caught two touchdown passes. I believe his first two receptions ever. Start the second quarter, put Alabama up 17-0. About halfway through the second quarter, put Alabama up 27-0. Cameron Latu was targeted specifically. Hey, let's run a play where he's the first option. Why? Well, he might be open and the play might work, but it's not Billingsley. And then did you see what happened later? There was a little counseling session on the sideline. That's what Saturday's week one neutral site paycheck game against the number 14 team in America, who might be the second best squad in a Power 5 conference, was to Nick Saban. There were so many things that he did not overlook the opponent. He didn't not take Miami seriously. There wasn't anything about the Hurricanes or that program or the players, the coaches, the staff, the fans, or anybody that he disrespected. He also had a proper evaluation. He thought of his team. And he thought, in addition to just skull-dragging Miami, that he also could probably complete that lesson he started about 2 weeks ago when he talked to the media. I said Nick Saban might have made a kid $800,000. Dan, didn't you see the comments? I'm making this up. Didn't Nick Saban say it was about $800,000 in name, image, likeness that Bryce Young had signed? He didn't give the details, but didn't he say, and there was about that much that he passed by?
I thought it was seven figures even.
Okay.
I thought it was even more than that.
He signed for $800,000 is the figure that we've been told. And there was a quote along the lines of Nick Saban saying, yeah, and there was actually about that much that he passed by. I think I figured that part out. You talk about – you know what I've told you before? I used to tell my players when I was coaching high school, you know, I've been 30 and 15. You've only been 15. Maybe you ought to trust me. I think Nick Saban looked at that kid. I think Nick Saban looked at that kid after he stroked a pen and went from $0 to approximately $800,000, if that's the number. And Bryce Young looked at him and said, coach or whoever in the athletic department or advisor or whoever or mom and daddy. But the guy who's been a coach in the NFL, he was in the NFL for 8 years before he ever went to the Dolphins. And who runs his college program like an NFL franchise more than anybody else ever has. Do you know what I bet you Nick Saban told Bryce Young when he looked at his coach and said, but what about this other half? The other 800,000, we're not going to sign those? I bet you Nick Saban said, wait. Whatever was in that second pile that he didn't sign, double it. There was an adult in the room, and I'm betting that that person gets a paycheck every 15 days from the University of Alabama. There was somebody in that room that looked at Bryce Young and said, won't you just wait on that second stack? Let's go ahead and get you a little fold money, a little cheddar. Is that what the kids say? Paper? Let's get a little something in your pocket. The kind that folds, not the kind that jingles. And let's get you taken care of. Now, let's sign about half. I've been offered 1.6. Well, let's take about half this. What about the other half? Double it. And when you show up and the first start you ever have, you set records at at that place. Of all the quarterbacks they've ever had, he tied Joe Namath in something. Joe Namath played in the 60s. He tied Namath in something and passed everybody else and everything else. That's the best description I can give you for what Bryce Young did the other day. And he didn't even play the entire game. I saw Paul Tyson. I saw Jalen Milroe at the very end. Miami got dropped in a wood chipper. They never had any. Oh, did you see Manny Diaz, a guy that I kind of like? Did you see him postgame? Yeah, third downs decided this. Well, Manny, sure. Yes. It would be on the list, yes. Third down. I don't even know what the third down numbers were. I don't even know what the numbers were, and I'll agree with him. I would lengthen the list a bit, but I swear, with a straight face, it's like, yeah, third down's really decided this. Okay. How about that true freshman throwing for about 350? Jameson Williams. Well, he's fast. That's how great Alabama was the other day. I think that some adult in the room in Tuscaloosa, probably Coach Saban, had some hand in it, looked at the second stack and said, won't you just wait? Don't give it 1 week. And whatever was in that second stat, I promise you, worked way more today than it would have been last week. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, continue with the Chuck Oliver Show on a Labor Day Monday. We are here live. Glad to have you.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Mackenzie Milton to pass. Welcome back to college football. Was a top 10 Heisman finisher in 2017 and 2018, suffered a catastrophic knee injury.
Notre Dame 41, FSU 38, that was the final. There is a lot more to that than just the final score. And let me say, Florida State is about, they're about championships. I was about to say they're about winning. They are. They're about championships. They're about winning enough in the same season that it equals something at the end other than, like, the Gator Bowl. No disrespect to anybody in Jacksonville. But that's not where Florida State's bar had ever been set. And they lost last night. That's not the same team that I saw as recently as last year. And hopefully, fingers and toes crossed, nobody is. But that's not the same team that I've seen, honestly. I saw them out of the tunnel in 2017, that opener, when they were number three, I believe, playing number one Alabama. And that is the last Saturday that I remember thinking about Florida State the way that I had basically nonstop since I was a fifth grader. And they appear at least to have stopped the bleeding that they're on. I said last week we had Ingram Smith on, good friend of ours from Tomahawk Nation, and I said the offensive line, it's improved enough. I was like, it's at the point where we don't need to talk about it. And he said, perfect description, absolutely. So there were some positives. We will get to it as we go through the week, obviously. 41-38, Notre Dame gets the dub. Had a game in Charlotte over the weekend, and Georgia gets the win, and they scored three. Now, the offense scored three, and there's all manner of context about what Georgia's going to be and what this equals, and that's the story now. I think what this equals is 12-0 regular season. Florida, this is up to you. If you're a Gator fan right now, or I don't know, Dan Mullen's listening. What up, Coach? This is up to you, because there is no LSU. They don't play in the West to begin with. There's no LSU or Bama or A&M floating in. And the game at Auburn, I guess, could get interesting. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm fingers and toes crossed, throwing salt over my shoulder, hoping, you know, I don't know, Kirby Smart opens an umbrella inside right before kickoff. All of that stuff, all right, I'll line it all up. I don't think that that Auburn this year, let's just say this season, I don't think Auburn is ready to stand in the middle of the ring and swing with that bunch. That's frightening. And I mean, like, hide under this table sort of scary. That's what that defense is. Jordan Davis, you know what the biggest – there was an offensive lineman at Wisconsin about 15 years ago. You remember Stockard McDougal? They called him Stockyard McDougal. Aaron Gibson, if you remember. Go look at Wisconsin offensive linemen in the NFL over the past 25 years. They were legit big. Everybody else, we just inflate. The guy who's 6'3", is 6'4 and a half, 295, he's 315. Stockyard McDougal was legit big. Aaron Gibson was a first-round pick, and he wasn't that good in the pros, but he was an All-American in college. He was a guard, and I bet he was 360. That's not healthy, can't be. Jordan Davis, what they say he is, that ain't lying. He's 3.5, and he's athletic somehow. Now, do you remember Terrence Cody, Mount Cody? He was athletic a little bit. Like, he could move gap to gap down the line of scrimmage. This is what I'm talking about, folks. Jordan Davis he's a monster in the middle of that defensive line. And then there's like eight other guys around him who aren't, I don't think, as good as him, or they're not the same player. Let me take that back. Adam Anderson may be as good as him in his own way, and that's not to diminish. N'Kobe Dean may be as good as him. They got a bunch who may be as good as him. But I'm going to tell you what there is not. Even in the NFL, like Fletcher Cox, I don't know, how big's Fletcher Cox? Like 330? I don't know. Aaron Donald is a small, small guy-ish compared to NFL defensive tackles. I told Aaron Donald to his face at ACC Media Days he was too small to play tackle in the NFL. So there aren't a lot of guys that size, even in the league, who can move. You can plug week A, sure. Getting a four-point snap. Stance, you see the ball snap, you just kind of lean forward. All right, well, that gap's full. Hopefully it occupies two men. That defense is unreal. Now, do they have work to do on offense? Absolutely they do. I think, though, that touchdown just before half, I think at half there was a conversation, but I'm not kidding, folks, other than like a block punt or a snap over the punter's head or something like that from like a real bad mistake from Georgia, I bet you there was a halftime conversation between Kirby and Todd Monken. Hey, what do you think we really need to do in the second half? Like, how much do you think we really need to do? You know what I saw JT Daniels do? Throw a bunch of short passes. Throw a bunch of short, under-control passes. And it worked enough. And when Georgia had to move the ball at the very end, when they had to get a couple of first downs, that happened. So I'll talk Clemson as we go through the day, but that was an amazing performance because Clemson is still talented. They don't have ETN, and their offensive line, they've got an issue there. But I want to give, and that is a separate topic, first and second and third and fifth and 11th and everything. I want to give credit to the kids wearing the red helmets because that was not a perfectly played game, and it was sort of a time capsule. But that was a great win. Make no doubt about it. Dan, what's up?
Just a couple more points to what you're just talking about right there is I think that with all of the talk about Georgia's offense, Kirby made a decision within the game, said, if we can play this game in a phone booth, we will, and we will win said battle because they won both sides of the line of scrimmage. There is no doubt about that. And credit to the offensive line, too, and Matt Luke and the job that they did because that was a real concern heading into this game. How are you going to block up Brian Brzee? How are you going to block up Miles Murphy? And they did a good enough job. But the other part of it as well, Chuck, is I've said it numerous times when it comes to this Georgia defense. Dan, this Georgia defense is elite. You don't get to the quarterback, you don't get the football back, you're not elite. They did both things. And if they can do that for the next 11 weeks, watch out rest of college football. That's going to be huge. I'm not worried about the offense right now and people saying, well, look what happened in Atlanta. You can't beat Alabama this way. As I said to somebody the other day, you didn't need to beat Alabama this weekend. You need to beat Clemson. You did that. Now move on. Worry about everything else later. So good for them. I last night watching that Florida State game, and I understand with the 4th and 2 that they had there on their own 33, I believe, of people saying that lost the game. You don't do that, you might win the football game. Okay, fine. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. It's kind of like, did this call go against us, and did it come back to hurt us later? You don't know. You don't know how the game is going to be shaped. I think, though, what Mike Norvell was doing is like Billy Bob Thornton's character in Friday Night Lights right before he flips the coin for the tiebreaker for the playoffs. He looks to Mike Winchell and says, "There's no curses, son." That was his no curses, son moment to the rest of his team, as he said, "We're not going to be scared. We're not going to play scared. We're not going to be a team that's worried about making the mistake to lose the football game." Chuck, the most encouraging thing I saw last night was a team who, in situations like that, in the late third quarter, early fourth quarter, even late into the fourth quarter, has given up those leads and lost those games. That's a team that came back and went toe-to-toe with a top-10 football team. That's a team that's gaining confidence, and that's something that hadn't been seen for some time at Florida State. I know they might be a program that's not about moral victories. They should take a moral victory from last night.
Yeah, exactly right. They're about titles, about winning something of substance, but it's a lot better than what happened against Virginia Tech a couple years back.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 54 sticks. It's what we do. About to turn 7 years old, so yay for us. Not a whole lot about Georgia's offensive performance is going to make it into the highlight reel. Not a whole lot from it. In fact, I've said my guess is at halftime there was a conversation. Look, how much do you think we need to do on offense? And so short, controlled passing game, which JT Daniels was able to pull off most of the time, but they couldn't run the ball the way they wanted to. Neither team could. To that extent, Clemson, for instance. Do you know what their numbers were for the night? Ran the ball 23 times for 6 feet. That's just not – five-star, four-star, slippery little freshman kid, number one. I mean, all of this stuff. Giant Godzilla walking out of the ocean at quarterback. 23 rushing attempts, 2 yards. Now, was Georgia a whole lot better? Not really. Until it had to be. 4 minutes and 48 seconds left, Georgia gets the football, and Clemson was right. If you want to go for it at that point, it still comes down to the fact that you had to get a stop anyway. The only difference was where you would get the ball back. So going for it on fourth down, absolutely. Georgia got the ball with 4 minutes and 48 seconds left on its own 45-yard line. Clemson had all three timeouts. Folks, that is the Old Testament length of time. And Georgia started running the ball. They ran it 9 straight times, got down to the Clemson 12-yard line. When they had to do it, they absolutely got it done. Want to welcome on now a guy who does a tremendous job covering Georgia. You can find him at UGASports.com every single day. He's the publisher. It is Roddy Nabulsi. Roddy, how are you, brother?
Doing fantastic. Glad to be talking about a Georgia win instead of what do they do now type of situation.
Talk about when they get that ball back. 4:48 and all three timeouts. There is no, like, just slow playing it and let's get a first down. You've got to do work. And Georgia ran it 9 straight times and moved the ball about 40 yards. Talk about that drive.
Well, let's give credit to Warren Erickson, who's in there at right guard for the injured Tate Radlage. This is a kid who spent all spring, all fall camp. Even after he broke his hand, he was still working out there at center. So he hadn't played right guard for in a minute, as the kids say. So he's out there, and you know, Clemson knows it's coming. Clemson, for the first time, they kind of moved those safeties up a little bit. They've been in that cover two shell, I think, most of the game, just keeping JT Daniels from having anything down the field to go after. So yep. All of a sudden, they know that Georgia's going to run it. The safeties come up. And even then, with a new right guard, Georgia was able to move it when they had to. They could smell the blood in the water, and they're like, look, we just need a couple first downs and some very strong runs there. And if you saw Zamir White at the end, you know, I can tell that there's three other guys on the sideline. They're like, okay, well, he's run it twice. Let me in now. Let me in. You know, Milton wants in. McIntosh wants in. James Cook wants in. And he's not even glancing at the sideline to see if they're going to call him out or something, or somebody else is coming in. He's tapping his watch, you know, saying, let's go, give me the ball again. And he was just – he was frothed up. He was ready to go. And, again, and Kirby Smart at the end of the game knows that that drive won it for him. Keep the ball out of their hands. Keep any last-ditch effort from Clemson. You know, some Hail Mary, Mr. Conservative coach, and Kirby Smart. He's like, I'm not going to give them the chance to do it. So they called the runs. The offensive line could feel it. They knew that they could salt the game away there. They were coming up to the line of scrimmage right as the clock expired, you know, to eat up as much game clock as possible. And it was a typical put it away when it counts type thing. And Kirby Smart mentioned it multiple times in the press conference afterwards because he knew that was the key to the game.
All right. This is sort of all one of those. It's all relative because I heard Brock Bowers described as a mid-tier recruit for Georgia. And I was like, okay, for Georgia. I'm glad you added that last part because he's a four-star kid that Kirby went all the way to California to get, and his, if you care about the rankings or ratings, he would have been in the mid-90s. So that's a mid-tier recruit in class for Georgia. Give everybody the lowdown, because I did not have him circled on my dance card to have that much action.
See, you didn't have me on your show enough, because that's all I would have talked about coming into the preseason was Brock Bowers. It's all we ever heard about. And this was Georgia's number one tight end target in that recruiting class. They really loved that kid, and that's all they raved about. And then we got some good-natured ribbing from the folks inside the Butzmere building, you know, the recruiting guys over there, like, hey, y'all got this kid really underranked. And they said the same thing about Jalen Carter. And we were, even though we had him like 50-something, they're like, he should be in the top five. So they don't pay attention to rankings except when it's time to bust our chops on them. And when Brock Bowers got here in the summer, that's all anybody talked about. They said, look, the athleticism of this kid. He just catches you off guard because he's this California kid, you know, you think he's going to be kind of laid back. Like, it's nothing laid back about this kid. He can jump 40-something inches. He has ridiculous speed in the 40. Giant paws to catch things. This is a, he's not a Kyle Pitts, but he's close. You know, they were just raving about this kid. And he's not going to be much of an inline blocker at this point. He's just a little – he doesn't have quite the size yet. But as much as people were excited about having Arik Gilbert on campus, the people inside the building were just thrilled to death to have Brock Bowers. Hey, go back. We got to speak to Todd Monken. Remember right in that first week of practice, and someone asked him about Arik Gilbert, and he said Arik Gilbert is in that Brock Bowers mold. In other words, the all-SEC tight end, freshman tight end from LSU last year, reminded him of their true freshman tight end by the name of Brock Bowers. It wasn't the other way around. He didn't say Brock Bowers is kind of like Arik Gilbert. He said Arik Gilbert was kind of like Brock Bowers. That tells you all you need to know.
Continuing riding to Bolsey again, UGASports.com. All right, I'm going to give you my deep technical coaching evaluation of the defense. Damn. That's about what I got for you. I have seen, and it's one game, but Clemson is a lot better. Oh, my God, what's wrong with DJU? Well, maybe not a whole lot. What's wrong with the Clemson offensive line? Well, probably something. But that doesn't explain 2 yards rushing and 3 points. And honestly, you know the note I made to myself Saturday night? Twice. Clemson's big plays that are supposed to turn the game don't do anything to affect the game. They had a turnover, and they had that punt thing, which I'm going to count as a turnover. They went backwards. Yeah. That's supposed to turn a game when you give the great opponent the ball in your own half of the field. Did affect the game in the least. That defense is just bad news.
Yeah, at one point, DJ Shockley, who was down on the sideline doing the call for the radio thing, he turns to David Pollock, who's down there watching the game with his kids, and he says, yeah, I just heard they're minus 8 yards rushing. And the slow Cheshire cat grin that spread across David Pollock's face. I wish I'd had my camera out for that, because defensive lineman in a big game, nobody was more excited than David Pollock down there. But you're right, and I took a lot of grief because I predicted Clemson to win this game, and rightly or wrongly, I pointed out the fact that Georgia's secondary, and these are concerns from inside the building. I'm not making this up out of whole cloth. They're worried because their number one backup and safety is a walk-on, Dan Jackson. It's not taking anything away from Dan Jackson. It's just they're not deep at safety like Kirby likes to be. You're replacing your guys at star. You don't have Mark Webb out there. You don't have Tyson Campbell. You don't have you don't have Tyke Smith. You don't have Eric Stokes. And on top of that, that was King Rico's first collegiate football game. And I put in my notes, I'm like, there's a concern here. We don't know how this defense is going to be. They need to avoid, holding calls and pass interference. There were three pass interference calls. The only success Clemson had was throwing against the secondary. Now, imagine if DJ had time to throw. Could he have picked them apart? Could they have had these big chunk plays? It didn't happen. Two high safeties and a defensive front. The biggest play of the game, and even to me bigger than the 74-yard pick six, was when Georgia rushed three guys on 3rd and 8 and Nolan Yep. Smith got a sack.
Yep.
You rushed three and you got a sack. And that set the tone for the entire game. The rest of it was like that. So right now I have no idea if Georgia's secondary is good or bad. I know they had three pass interference calls, which that's not a good sign. But I did say by the end of the season they're going to be lights out. But you don't even need to have a good secondary if you have 7 sacks and tackles for loss and the number of times they affected the quarterback. DJ looked like deer in headlights. I think he's going to be good later on. He's talented. He's not a great runner. I think a lot of people have misconceptions about that. But there were times when they called that a designed run. He was so timid going up to the line, and he looked at his feet, and he looked at how long he held onto the ball because, the coverage was there because you only had to rush 3 or 4. So when you can rush 3, rush 4, and affect the quarterback like that and drop all those guys into the coverage, that is a nightmare. Good luck, UAB. Good luck, South Carolina. Good luck, Vandy. Anybody
Buddy,
scoring on this defense.
You didn't corner the market on that opinion about the secondary. I said even if it would just be week 2 or 3, let them play together for 1 week. There's lack of experience at some spots. There's almost no experience playing together. I was like, and then every receiver across the line looks like a small forward. I thought that Clemson would have a lot more success in the air. I want you to talk, though, about up front, because nobody ever has enough tackles or, in a three-man front, you never have enough linemen. Nobody ever does. And as impressive as Jordan Davis is, he's just next level, sort of, otherworldly. Like, he's going to get hardware at the end of the season. That's going to happen. It's Carter. Yep. It's Trayvon Walker. It's Devontae Wyatt. Good Lord. Run through some of those other names of the guys up front.
Well, take Jalen Carter. I mentioned him earlier because we had him ranked as one of the top 50 players in the nation, and folks inside the Buttsmere building at UGA are like, you guys are idiots for not putting him in the top 5. They think he's a first rounder, an absolute difference maker. And you did see him club a guy to the ground, just lights out. And when you have Big Jordan in that zero technique and he's taking on those A gaps, and now all of a sudden you can leave a Trayvon Walker, who played probably the most snaps I think he's played at UGA.
Yep.
One-on-one, there's no shading on his side. There's no chipping because, they're trying to get a hat on a hat. You let him go one-on-one. You let Jalen Carter go one-on-one. And that frees up Adam Anderson on the edge and Nolan Smith on the edge. And those guys, in other words, you saw N'Kobe Dean get 2 sacks. You saw Quay Walker all over the field. You saw Channing Tindall. Those 3 linebackers, that's a trio that's just absolutely filthy. But they were so clean. Those uniforms came out. They never got caught up in all the garbage. They had straight shots in. Channing Tindall comes flying in, drops that Shipley, the All-American, freshman All-American possible running back, because he had such clean angles to get in. He just was able to zip in there, knock him down. And it's because Jalen Carter is taking on a double team. And it's because even when they triple teamed, you basically had a center and 2 guards on Jordan Davis. He
yep.
was still able to affect that situation. Now he's basically got 2.5 gaps locked up, whether he goes to his right or his left. So gap control was there from the minute the first snap for Clemson, and they weren't going to be able to run it. What was Georgia able to do? Drop a couple safeties. Now they can't throw it. And that's why you get 3 points, even though you're a very, very good team. And those offensive linemen, you can see those kick steps get shorter and shorter, man, as the game progressed. They weren't exactly they didn't want to get out over their skis and try to get around these guys, because you felt like you needed to have your feet underneath you when Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and Devontae Wyatt, I got to give him credit. This is a kid from my old hometown in Decatur. I've been to his school down in Towers. That is a that is a rough year to come from, and he played like he played hardcore. I know he's not going to get all the credit and all the accolades.
He can move. He can move for a big guy.
And he, again, just a senior that came back. Talk about senior leadership. I mean, he took that additional COVID year, and he's back playing for you. He and Justin Schaefer both did that. I think they're the only two guys that came back for that extra year. And they are going to be immeasurable in Georgia's success going forward.
Yeah, and he got one of those hands up on a pass defense, too. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, I think, first series.
Yeah. Am I remembering, and I don't want to get this wrong for sure, wasn't he a kid that was committed and then went like a JUCO route and then came back to Georgia? So he really had a delayed route at the beginning. Am I remembering correctly?
There's something. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it took him a minute to get in there, and so that is a kid who's just an absolute monster. And the timing of his jump to knock down a pass from a 6 foot, what, 6'5", yeah, whatever, 6'3", whatever DJ is. You know, and I held back on making the tweet about how DJ's too short to play quarterback, which every time a pass is knocked down, that seems to be the issue. But that was just timing. That was senior leadership. That's a guy who's played so many snaps. He knows that, hey, I'm controlling my gap, controlling my space, but you're going to have to throw over me. And sure enough, he knocked it down. And again, that just every time DJ wanted to go to his right, he knows Devontae Wyatt's over there, or Adam Anderson's coming from that edge. And how many times did they have to blitz a guy in the secondary? Never, because you were affecting him. So,
last thing I want to ask you, Brock Bowers, Jalen Johnson, Ladd McConkey, obviously not names most people were expecting. Real quick, just give me the next receiver or two that you expect to either be back or be back full.
I'd love to see Kearis Jackson come back. He was only out there returning punts. I think he's about 80%. But, you know, when everybody's going after George Pickens, or they start to look at Jermaine Burton, and Jermaine Burton needs to pick up on his blocking from what I've seen. But when you start to key in on those top guys, you know, everyone's like, hey, we need to watch Ladd McConkey. We need to watch Brock Bowers. We need to keep an eye on those guys. It leaves Kearis Jackson the slot to just slice and dice you and rip you apart. So I know he's a well-known name, and everyone will talk about the new guys, but I'm thinking this offense, you know, could not move the ball. They couldn't do anything because those the way Clemson played it, Venables called a great game on defense. But if you need somebody who can exploit that, that's Kearis Jackson. Get a healthy Kearis Jackson out there. Get Dom Blaylock back. Dom dressed out, which was surprising to me. So get Dom Blaylock back, or get Kearis Jackson back. And now all of a sudden you have a headache as a defensive coordinator, because you think you put a body on him and you'll stop him. Kearis will get open.
Roddy, I appreciate you staying so long, man. There was so much to go over. Appreciate your time, brother. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Y'all take care.
All right, UGASports.com, Roddy Nabolsi.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on Monday. And Saturday night in Charlotte turned out how it did because of the most basic element in football. Clemson's offensive line is still not up to par. It's not up to Clemson par. It's not up to national championship par. And it was facing possibly the only front seven as good as or better than Clemson's. In fact, I'm going to label it that. They play different defenses, but they're loaded. They're deep. And Clemson's offensive line is still a work in progress. Georgia's offensive line is not great, and it's not perfect, and it wasn't even all five where the coaches wanted those five. It wasn't the five, and they didn't even have them there, the positions they were supposed to be in. But they kind of made it work. There's a whole lot of what we saw on Saturday night in that one statement, that their offensive line just isn't – there's a whole lot of what happened in that one statement. And then there's the related – like Clemson's offensive line, it will be good enough, I suppose, against Boston College. It will be good enough probably against Louisville. An offensive line evolves over a season as much as any position group. That's the upside here. Clemson's offensive line, now that Saturday's done, Clemson's offensive line now has 13 weeks and 11 real actual games to evolve and improve. After 13 weeks, because you got all of this week leading up to week two, et cetera, your bye week, game 11, game 12, and then the week leading up to Charlotte. And I am fast-forwarding Clemson back into the ACC title game. So Clemson will have most likely 13 weeks where they get to play 11 real games to evolve and improve. And at that point, it might, the offensive line might get pushed again, depending on who comes out of the Coastal and what their season looks like. Or, do you know another scenario? I said Clemson has because it would be from Saturday when they walked off the field. It was 13 weeks from that night until the ACC title game. So in this scenario, I say, depending on who comes out of the Coastal, maybe Manny Diaz gets everything right and they run the record in the conference and boom, they're in Charlotte and they got just fire breathers all over defense. Part of their problem was they lost their defensive leader in the first quarter, Bubba Bolden. He wasn't playing dirty, just how it turned out. He didn't do everything he should have out on a tackle, wound up spearing a guy. That was a correct call. But part of, if you look at Clemson's schedule, I don't know who's coming out of the Coastal, but part of what I just said was 11 real games over the next 13 weeks. That's the part we do know. And it could be extended, depending on the opponent in Charlotte, if they're a 22.5-point dog, from 13 weeks to play 11 real games and evolve and improve. You could extend that to 17 weeks and 12 real games to evolve and improve. If Clemson has 17 weeks between opponents like that, and they get to play 12 times where it counts, they don't get to see the other team every day, they don't learn each other's signals, it's a real live game. That could be the scenario that, I don't know, Virginia Tech, they look good. And I kind of called that on Friday, didn't I? Or North Carolina rallies or Miami or whoever. But it could just be another tune-up game and then another four Saturdays to sharpen that O-line edge. How might that be? How might we be fast-forwarding at least to Charlotte, if not the first round of the playoffs? Take a look at Clemson's schedule coming up. The next Bulldogs, not quite the same. Clemson at home this Saturday against South Carolina State. They're the Bulldogs, right? Yeah. Who's after South Carolina State? That'd be Georgia Tech. Yeah. They just lost at home to Northern Illinois. A little later in the season, Clemson hosts UConn. See UConn in the news over the weekend? UConn's coach has just announced he's quitting at season's end, following an 0-2 start, including a home loss to Holy Cross. You can check the rest of the schedule, and there's a flea here, there's a wart there. At no point should this team be really pushed, with the possible exceptions of NC State and FSU, and that's speculative a little bit. Neither is in Clemson's class roster-wise. But depending on injuries and such, it could be an interesting Saturday. But neither of those would get interesting unless Clemson helps. And I'm being sloppy with the football. The offensive line was the deal on Saturday. That's the last time Clemson will face a team like that for a minimum of 13 weeks. More likely, 17. They've got a chance to evolve and improve.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.